Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kicking It with KPOC, a podcast about business owners, marketing struggles and solutions, and other business-related topics. This is episode 11, Family-Owned Businesses with Dale Baker. Today, we'll be joined by Dale Baker, who currently is the Vice President of Sales at J.T. Eaton. J.T. Eaton is a family-run business that's been providing pest control products since 1932. Dale also serves as the president of Phi Chi Omega, a national fraternity for pest control professionals. He previously worked in sales at EMI Music and was the vice president of sales at Centoff Corporation. Dale also owned his own talent management company for musicians and is the inventor of the patented Rock Jimmy guitar accessory. What would you like to add, Mirella?
Oh, man, I don't know where to start. I think Dale and I go way back to the good old days of Centoff. That's where we met, and I think it was 2005. And Dale's grandfather, Stanley Baker, actually, I think he owned Centoff, and I was hired by him, I think, right out of college. And then Dale moved down from Ohio, and I think it was 2005. And we worked together for a couple of years. And I kind of learned a lot of good stuff from Dale. He's a kind of a communications extraordinaire, I think. And I learned from him, and I don't know if I've ever shared this from Dale, but I used to listen to him talk on the phone. And I really liked how he just carried on the conversation as if the other person is in the room with him. He would just kind of like call the place out of the blue and pretend that he knows the person casually. He'd be like, oh, is Bob around there? Oh, I'm sure he's busy. And then it would just have like a natural feel. I'm like, man, you know, one day when I grow up, I want to do stuff like that. So every now and then I sprinkle in some of Dale's stuff into my conversations today. So let me see if I have anything else. Mostly just, you know, we had lots of fun, and I learned a lot from Dale. And is there anything that you would like to add, Dale? Do you like to talk about yourself?
Well, I just want to say thanks for having me. I mean, this is a real pleasure, and congratulations. I am a fan of the podcast. I do listen to it frequently, and I think there's a lot of really good information on there. And as far as the history of working with Mirella, I can tell you that she's always been super creative and amazing at problem solving. So it's always been an interesting opportunity. And I think I've learned just as much as you learned from me. And by the way, when I was being super friendly to most of those people on the phone, it's probably because I forgot most of their names and information and where we met and things like this. So I always just become extremely friendly with almost anybody I can in terms of, you know, phone conversations and even face-to-face stuff. So it's one of the tricks of the trade, especially when you have a bad memory.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely remember that a lot. And I also remember that you always had like a bunch of bananas on your desk and a huge yeah. jar of peanut butter. And right. So maybe those are like secret ingredients to your good phone conversations, too. I don't know.
That's right. Protein and potassium, you know, it's a killer combination. So.
All right.
It actually killed Elvis, I think, but he used to fry it up. So it's a different story.
Oh, he's not alive?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I let the cat out of the bag?
Elvis alert. Is still alive. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know anything about Elvis, actually.
Okay, so maybe we can get into what exactly J.T. Eaton is and how it got started and where the company is now.
Yeah, interestingly enough, J.T. Eaton was started in 1932. My grandfather purchased the company in 1949. And he never changed the name. You know, my grandfather's name was Stanley Baker. And he never changed it to Baker Enterprises or anything like that, because when he started out as, you know, this was a mail order company, and he was, you know, peddling products and selling out of the trunk of his car. Actually, it started off as a mail order company. So he really expanded it from there. But the reason he never changed the name is he always wanted to make a sales call. And, you know, of course, if somebody knows you're the owner of a company, what's the first thing they ask you for? Yeah, a discount. So he'd always mm-hmm. say, oh, gee, I'd love to give you a discount. But, you know, old man Eaton, he's a real son of a gun. And, you know, I don't want to get my pay docked, so I can't do it. So here's your price. Thanks a lot. Have a great day. So anyway, so J.T. Eaton sort of really expanded from the days of the trunk and the mail order company. Stanley invented bait blocks, as they're known today, which is a poisonous cake that rodents feed on and die. But obviously now it's a staple in any kind of pest control program. He also invented the modern glue traps. Before Stan invented these glue traps, as they're known today, and PETA hates them, obviously, but before that, pest control operators would just put hunks of resin on their radiator, melt the glue down, and that would turn into a trap or a glue spread that they would put on like a board or something. So he invented a way to actually package that. And since then, you know, Jay Teton's kind of went on to do a lot of different creative, innovative things for the pest control industry. And then we branched out from there into retail. And then, of course, janitorial supply. And then it goes on to farm and so on and so on. So that's a little bit about us.
All right. So I assume that there's still, you know, different family members in the business. Do you think that makes it easier or harder when you're planning and flushing out ideas?
Wow. That is a really good question, because anybody who's dealt with family owned and operated businesses like JT Eaton, be they smaller or bigger, would absolutely recognize that it is a very challenging proposition. You have the family dynamic, you have the aggressive, you know, members, you have everything you have in the regular business, but at the end of the day, you're related to these people and you're going to see them at that holiday dinner, or you're going to talk to them in the morning, you know, outside the company sort of parameters. So let me say this. I've worked with a lot of different companies, and the family owned company, whether it's JT Eaton or anybody else, has always got a strained dynamic. And it can get pretty loud, I think, for not only for, you know, JT Eaton, you know, within those walls when the family's around. But I think, as I said, any company, and I'm sure 99.999% of any family-owned operated company would certainly say the same thing. So it's got a lot of challenges, but it's got so many tremendous benefits as well.
Yeah, that's true. And so I guess we should switch it over a little bit and talk about marketing, and kind of talk about what you guys do to market your company. And I guess if you have any success stories, also if you have any failures that you want to share and kind of tell us what you learned from those. And so I guess just talk about like your secret sauce to marketing at JT Eaton.
Right on. It's all about the secret sauce, isn't it, Marilla?
That's right.
I know.
That's right.
I know.
What is that movie? Oh, no, that movie says there is no secret ingredient, but I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll digress and get back.
Yeah, what is that movie, Marilla?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Ratatouille?
Oh, Ratatouille. That's the movie. And it says there is no secret ingredient, but I don't know.
Yeah. Not to further digress, but you don't even like sauces, Marilla.
That's true. Yeah. I hate sauces. So.
You don't like the gravy? How do you
my God, Dale, no. Ew. Oh. There's the brown one and then the white one. I don't know which one is worse.
What about pasta sauce? That's red.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. It's basic, so I can do it.
Wow.
But anyway, so what is the pasta sauce or the gravy of JT Eaton's marketing?
That is an amazing question. Marilla, let me tell you this. Some of the things that we've learned about marketing is, number one, conceptually, we know we're not great at marketing, and we rely on firms like yourselves to create and help us understand things like this. One of the things that I think everyone sort of believes, including myself when I first started, was, oh, I'm good at marketing. It's just the process of trying to figure out how to sell things, right? Well, no. We sort of learned the hard way that, you know, either you have the opportunity to invest into a marketing program where, you know, you create conceptual pieces and do things that build your program, right? Or the perception of your program, or you could just launch your program and you usually wind up trying to just undercut people or you pay for it in the end because you're just going to have a lower price point to begin with. Marketing gives you the opportunity to, or actually marketing correctly, gives you the opportunity to sell things at a higher price point. And I think that's probably the most important thing for most businesses is margin. Would you guys agree to that so far?
Yes, we would definitely co-sign to that
idea. You don't want to be in a situation where you're just battling with lower prices, because then your competition does the same thing. All of a sudden, everyone's selling one penny above cost and everyone goes out of business.
Yeah, it's essentially race to the bottom.
Exactly.
And one of the companies that's kind of made a good money doing that is Walmart, but most people are not Walmart and they can't afford to just sell things for pennies.
And I shouldn't say everyone goes bankrupt. Amazon and Walmart survive and everyone else goes bankrupt.
Yeah, but there can only be one Walmart and one Amazon. So it's usually it doesn't work out if you're just racing to the bottom based on who can sell items for the cheapest price.
So what do you guys do to avoid that, to not be in that situation?
That is another good question. But before we get to that question, I want to ask you guys a question.
All right, hit us.
This is a really good marketing question. What is the difference between Walmart and Target?
Perception.
I mean, you're right. I mean, the prices are pretty darn close, aren't they?
Pretty darn close. I think that Target has done a way better job crafting the marketing story or telling the story how you have a more enjoyable, exceptional shopping experience at their store and how they treat their employees better. And I think that there are some factual pieces to that story. I do believe that they treat their employees slightly better based on stuff that's out there. But, you know, that's just secondhand information that I have read. But really, everyone knows their spot, their marketing dog who has like the bullseye on its face. And everyone, they've also done a really good job with just creating like the enjoyable ambiance in their store. When you go in, it's red, you feel happy, you feel like, oh my God, this is amazing. And Walmart hasn't done a lot of that stuff. Walmart hasn't told their story as well as Target has.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in these retailers either, but I definitely think everything Morel is saying is true. And Target might just be a little bit more like, have a little bit more prestige to it. You get checked out a little bit quicker. People seem a little bit more interested in you. It's not like you're shopping at the absolute bottom dollar retailer.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I think a lot about this sort of thing, but let me give you another really good example of this. Well, so watch this, Jake and Marilla. So ask me where I got this pair of pants.
Where'd you get your pants?
Oh, I got it at Walmart.
Oh, okay. Man.
Okay, now ask me again.
Where'd you get your pants, Dale?
Oh, I got them at Target or Target.
See, okay.
I was waiting to see if anyone was going to do that.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The perception is so much different. And again, I mean, obviously the product, I don't know how much of the product is pretty much the same. I think, you know, Target may have some more brand name or at least higher brand names, because especially for clothing and stuff like that. But I mean, for the most part, you know, in terms of goods, it seems like it's the same stuff. One of them is cool and one of them is definitely not cool to shop at, you know?
Yes. And the Target, in terms of clothing and apparel, they almost kind of have like mini boutiques within some of the Target stores. So they have like seasonal designers who showcase like specific lines that they've created for Target. So it's definitely a shopping destination. Whereas Walmart is like, oh, I need some toilet paper, I'm just going to go to Walmart. When I go to Target, I'm actually like enjoying that shopping.
Isn't Target the retailer that did the Lily Pulitzer thing where they partnered with some, I think she's a well-known designer?
Yeah, that's an example of one of the kind of like limited time boutique setups within the store where a high-end designer creates a specific line that's limited to Target and costs less, and then people just go there and wait in line for hours. And I was one of those people once, and it was intense. You're right, Dale, that the two perceptions are completely different, and that's all result of marketing.
Right on. And let me ask you this, Marilla. I'm not picking on you, but let me ask you a question. Have you ever gone to Target to get one thing, and have you ever left with just one thing?
Okay, so yeah, no. I recently had an experience. I went in to get a bottle of shampoo, mm-hmm. and I came out with $150 worth of clothes, like tablecloths, like weird stuff that I bought. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why I did it. I guess it felt good.
It's I don't know what they do. I think they're pumping that oxygen into those stores like they do at casinos or something. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Like, and Jake, I don't know if you've had the same experience, but I've never been to a Target to get one thing and left with one thing. And I don't know anybody else who has. And the response is pretty much the same thing. We don't know why we did it, but we ended up with $150 worth of stuff. That's amazing. That's marketing.
Yes. It's just creating a perception and enticing people to engage and take action and purchase from you.
Mm-hmm. So do you want your product to be the Walmart of the industry or the Target of the industry?
I mean, yeah, that is the question. And is that the question that you ask in your marketing meetings when you meet with your team? How do you get your money people at your company to give you more money to spend on marketing?
Ooh, there's the literally $1 million, or actually for JT Eaton, that's the $10,000 question.
All right. So how do you make that happen?
Well, again, it's all about this budget. And my CFO is very conservative, and rightfully so. He has a formula in his mind in terms of margin dollars that we like to do for, you know, marketing dollars. So for something where it's a current item or existing business or an existing customer, you know, it's sort of easy to come up with those formulas and say, well, we can come up with a 3% from sale of the goods, you know, gross number to give 3% of the gross to figure out what we want to do for this particular customer. Or and again, we do like to sort of do that rifle approach versus the shotgun approach where, you know, we figure, again, we have a lot of distributors that we work with. So we figure those guys are probably better at connecting with their customers who are eventually our end customers. We figure those guys are better at doing that. So we're happy to do, a percentage marketing programs where we're setting those up with those guys. That being said, again, we work with some really talented guys. We've been really fortunate to work with some talented guys. One of these gentlemen's name is Howard Task. Another organization that we work with is called the Creative Spot. And again, what we figured out was working with a marketing firm is better than us trying to figure it out, because obviously, you know, we're not good at marketing. We're good at making products and trying to sell them. But without the marketing component, it always turns into a price war. And as you said, nobody wants to do the race for the bottom. So again, so to the long story short for your answer is, number one, if it's an existing product, we come up with a percentage based on the margin of a product. If it's a new product, like the Zendo Zone that we just launched, that's pure gonzo guerrilla marketing where, you know, we came up with this new product called Zendo Zone. It's a, it's like a ceramic or a terracotta Tahitian character, okay? And inside of that goes a citronella candle. So at night, the eyes glow and stuff, and it's really cool. But we've sold zero so far. So getting my CFO to give me, $1,000 or $10,000 is very challenging. So, you know, we talked to the marketing guys, and they agreed that, you know, they helped us with some collateral material. They helped us with imagery. They helped us with figuring out what this thing's going to look like. And that's all based on, you know, product development. But then when you get to, okay, well, what are we going to do to promote it at the shows? What are we going to do to explain to people that it's here? What are we going to do about a launch, you know? And again, if you have no background sales or and historical sales to base that off of, you kind of got to wing it and, you know, take a guess. So, as I said, my CFO is extremely conservative. What we ended up doing was going out buying some grass skirts, hula, you know, we did the hula skirts. We did the, flower lays, and we turned our trade show booth into sort of like a tiki party. Mm-hmm. And for a low amount of money, we were able to really do a big launch and make a big impact. Now, again, that doesn't work with every sales guy. because, you know, if somebody's uncomfortable with doing things like that, not only does it not, it's not good for your salesperson, but it doesn't translate to the customer either. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't translate to the customer and the person's not passionate and they're bummed out that they're wearing a hula skirt, then you got a bad situation.
That's very true. And looking back over the last 12 months or even 24 months, do you have any success stories of your online marketing that you guys have done, or anything offline, which has, I guess, given you the most bang for your buck, online and offline?
So our online program basically consists of, and this is, again, based on, you know, J.T. and Pest Control. We sell it, again, to the professionals as well as to retailers. So we know that we are not this Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson guy. We're not going to do this shotgun blast and hit any percentage of the population to make the juice worth the squeeze, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we rely on, again, our distributors and or our retail partners to help us convey messages. For our digital program, specifically to your question, again, you know, we do sell through the Amazons and, you know, Walmart.coms and all these others. So we have done some of the, you know, the pay-per-clicks and things mm-hmm. like that. But at the end of the day, I think the things that were most successful for JT Eaton was to listen to the what they're offering in terms of their full programs, because you could get lost in the minutia of how many things they have. Thinking about really what your end goal is, what you're willing to invest, and then turning that into some sort of best guess marketing plan. We've had good success with some of that click through, some of the stuff where we're tying it into videos. Videos was obviously a smash for us when you start talking about new items. And it wasn't even really hard or expensive to get into that. You know, when we started doing some short videos where there's basically narration on top of slides, it was the fastest way to make well-produced videos. And of course, we went through our marketing firm for this, but it was a huge success for us.
Yeah, Jake and I recently went to a digital marketing conference, and everyone there was talking about audio and video. And I think one of the speakers said that in 2 years, I think half of the online searches are going to be like voice searches, people asking Alexa and other devices. And if you don't have audio and video content out there, then you're going to be missing out on a huge chunk of people who are looking for things that you might offer, but they just might not find you if you don't have the content that they're looking for.
For sure. Social media, literally. I mean, how big of a percentage is that for the programs that you guys talk about with your clients?
Huge, huge. Social media is extremely important and a huge part of someone's online presence, because some social media platforms, for example, like YouTube, people are kind of treating it as a search engine. So they have a problem, they go to YouTube and they ask a question. Well, if you have a video that answers their question or solves their problem, you've gotten their attention. And also, people really rely heavily on online reviews and just kind of see, you know, trying to find out what your personality is and what you're like. So Facebook and Instagram are great for that. So, you know, we always tell people, if you're not online and you don't have a solid social media presence that matches your brand image and your message, some people will think that you're not actually real.
Yeah, it's really only second to having a website. I would say that's the first thing. If someone comes to us and they don't even have a website, or their website's, you know, really old and outdated, then I think they should update their website first. And then if they're willing to do social media, they should do social media. Because if you're not willing to do it and do it right, you can sometimes do more harm than good on there.
Yeah. Jake, let me ask you this. Do you believe that the current status of a website is like your business card, you know, or the old school business card? I mean, obviously business cards aren't as important as they used to be. So it's like, now it's the website where, You know, when you used to get a nice, really nice business card, you'd be like, wow, this guy's powerful or amazing or creative or something. And now it's, well, let me check their website and I'll give you my vibe on what's happening after that.
It is. It's actually, I would put it as a combination of that and your store, your online storefront. It's like if you're a retail business and someone walks in your store, it's the same thing going to the website, even if you don't sell the products on the website, because even like word of mouth, if I tell someone, oh, you should go check out this retailer, the first thing that person is going to do is Google that company either to get driving directions or to learn, you know, what their hours are, and they're going to see that website and the website is going to change their opinion. It's either going to reinforce that recommendation or it's going to take away from it if the website's really outdated or if it doesn't exist. The person might think, oh, has this business gone out of business? You know, my friend recommended it, but maybe I should check with them and see if they're even still around.
Yeah, that is amazing now. And okay, Jake, so let me follow up with that one. What about Yelp? I mean, and that again, now you're talking about it's 100% customer feedback reviewing someone for good or ill. What's your take on that?
Yeah. So now we get into reputation management, which is another huge thing that's going on now. People look at those reviews and really that's more of a thing. You don't even get to choose the platforms. If someone leaves a review, good or bad for you on Yelp or Google or Facebook, wherever it is, as a business owner, it's really the onus is on you to go find that review and respond to that person, especially if it's a negative review, because if there's no, you know, counterpoint to what that person said, someone might just believe what the person says in the review. Whereas if I'm the business owner and I go respond and try and take that offline and kind of also provide a little bit of an explanation about why maybe this person's experience isn't typical, I think that's super important to, you know, preventing things like that from happening where someone goes there and sees that bad review and then doesn't visit your business or doesn't shop with you.
Right on. Okay, Jake, follow up to my follow up. So my wife owns a spa in Cleveland. Okay. Her Yelp reviews are tremendous. She'll get a negative one and go through the roof. You know, I mean, that's just dealing, you know, that's dealing with humans. You're going to get a negative because somebody's going to have a bad day, whatever's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. What is your recommendation in terms of how she should respond to those? And in, I guess in a little more detail, because, you know, look, let's face it. There's always going to be something bad happening. And, you know, I think, you know, people sometimes get concerned that, well, you're going to reinforce a bad habit and, you know, give a guy, you know, a free ice cream cone or something after he leaves you a nasty note and hopefully he takes it away, you know?
This is a super important point. First, I would say to the idea of, oh, I got a bad review and I have a bunch of 5-star reviews. That's not a problem. You don't want all 5-star reviews necessarily. If I go to a business and they have 100 5-star reviews and no 4-stars, no 3-stars, no 2s, no 1s, I think, did they just buy these reviews? I mean, no one gets all 5-star reviews. There's people just don't like your stuff because it's not their style. And then to the second part of what you're saying, you definitely want to not give people more stuff on social media or online than you would offline. If I call your business, you should offer me the same thing, whether it's a discount or a refund as you do online. Because when you give someone more online, it does create this cycle where you're driving more and more people to complain online because they know they can get more from your business if they just go complain on your social media channels. So you end up giving away more stuff and you end up having more people leaving bad reviews for you in hopes of getting some sort of free product or something else. Morella might be able to talk more about what to actually write, you know, in terms of the words.
Yeah, you obviously want to acknowledge the person and apologize and then try to take the conversation offline. And I have seen quite a few businesses who actually argue back and forth with the person trying to dispute what they're claiming. And you never want to do that. Take it offline. And when you do take it offline, like Jake said, don't offer the person any extra stuff that you wouldn't offer to other people who call your business and complain, because then you create like these kind of like online terrorists, like customers who just think about, well, if I just kind of threaten companies and leave them bad reviews online, they just give me free stuff. So that becomes their hobby.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We saw one example of something else Merle was saying, a restaurant in Chicago. I don't want to go into too many details, but a customer will write a review and say, oh, you know, I don't like that the pizza that you served is cold. it was too cold, and the own manager will respond, oh, well, you know, you bleeping moron, you, cold pizza is better than warm pizza. If you don't like cold pizza, you shouldn't even come to my restaurant. It's like, why do you say that online?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so amazing. Let me ask you this, guys. Where do you see Facebook going with this whole situation? I mean, like, you guys are a little bit younger than me. And I think that, you know, for me, if, I mean, even I could see Facebook is probably not as cool, certainly for the younger demo, whereas it just seems like Instagram is just chewing it up right now.
And I think for Facebook, it might not matter so much who wins since their Instagram is owned by Facebook. But I think it's definitely true that Instagram is more trendy than Facebook, would you say, Marella?
Yes, but just like you mentioned, Dale, I think Instagram is more of the younger demographic and Facebook is older. But the fact of the matter is that a huge chunk of the U.S. population is of more advanced age, and you still need to reach those groups of people. And really, they also have the most buying power in this country as well. And yeah. So it's, I think it's very important to speak to all demographics who are within your target audience and kind of have the conversations where they're having conversations. Just because Instagram is kind of the hot thing right now, that doesn't mean that Facebook is dead. People are still using, I mean, I think most of us log into Facebook at least once a day.
Right. Have you seen anybody successfully use Twitter for marketing?
Yes, in certain senses. I think, you know, if you think about who's on Twitter a lot, you know, politicians, journalists, and journalists, I think, are where you can really capitalize on Twitter. Because if you get a relationship going with a journalist, they might be able to write a story about your company or use you as a source in their, you know, article. So let's say I'm a journalist, you know, I'll try and put JT Eaton into this. If I'm a journalist and I'm writing an article about, you know, some infestation that caused like a big, large building to get shut down, and they need someone to give them information on why that might have happened, they might quote someone from JT Eaton and say, according to pest control experts at JT Eaton, they didn't have enough, you know, traps in their building. So, you know, a rat infestation got out of hand. It might not be a reasonable example, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that you can get out of Twitter.
Yes, yeah. Definitely PR. And also, if someone is trying to become an influencer or a public speaker and someone who's trying to build up a following, then Twitter is great for that. Just to put out your latest blog posts, put out your opinions, and just kind of create a group following on there. So it's very powerful for that. But you have to have something valuable to say. You shouldn't just go and like tweet up a storm and have it be like all fluff and annoying stuff. You have to have substance to be successful.
Yeah, pick your platforms wisely.
Yes.
Right on. Yeah, I think that's it. Jake, when you were talking about it, and Marilla, and then your follow-up, of course, too, was it just sounds like it's like, you know, when you're marketing through Twitter, it's like this 300 or 400 level of marketing where it's like this super soft sell. There's no direct at all. It's like, you know, you're just building the, you know, perception of things, you know, and letting people connect the dots, which obviously is extremely powerful. You know, we've seen a lot of that where once, you know, when somebody makes the decision that, you know, Coke is better than Pepsi, it's like, that's it. You know, you just know it, you know? So I definitely agree with what you're saying. And I see that more as like a conceptual tool or a perception, a tool of perception, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a tool of, you know, conversations and storytelling. And
yes.
and soft selling. So you want to be helpful. We want to be resourceful, and you want to be kind of the person that everyone goes to get information when they need a source for a story or when they have a problem. So it's definitely like a slow drip campaign instead of like set it, forget it, and not worry about it.
Yeah, you're trying to look like the expert, or hopefully you actually are the expert, and you're just putting that information out there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. And that's been good for us too, obviously. You know, one of the really cool things that we can say is we're one of the only pest control companies that sells to retailers. So, we could say, look, we're one of the only profession, you know, we sell to the professional market, but we also sell to retail. So we have that, the perception that we are, you know, have more knowledge about pest control, which typically we do, and that, which is a cool thing, you know what I'm saying? So, unfortunately, it works in the reverse level on the professional side, where if a pro thinks you're selling your stuff to a retailer, you know, and we would never do this, you know, the same exact type of thing, then you could become ostracized from the professional marketplace. So let's, if you open the back of a, you know, a pest control operator's truck, and, you know, you would never see like a product, like a Decon, you wouldn't see a Decon because, you know, pros would never use a traditionally retail item like that. So we sort of have to walk that tightrope a lot.
So what's that like in the pest control industry? Is it mostly retail? Is it me going to buy the stuff at Home Depot to, for my home or my business? Or is it professionals applying it for someone like me?
Yeah, we're fortunate enough to sort of walk that tightrope and work with both of those industries in terms of retail. So our retail campaign really looks like Ace Hardware and co-ops like that. So, you know, your mom and pops who are able to buy retail products the same way that some of these big box guys do, we sell to those guys for homeowners who want to do it themselves. On the flip side, we sell to professional distributors. Of course, these are different types of products and different lines, so that these two, you know, paths should never cross, but we'll sell, you know, our professional program to, you know, a major distributor like Univar, who then does resell on to people like, you know, Orkin and big names like this, and, you know, your Truly Nolans and all the other big guys that are out there in the field. But so again, we create these products that we sell them to distributors. Distributors then resell those to either, on the retail side, to retailers who then resell those to consumers, or on the other side, it's distributor to a pest control operator who would then come to Jake's house and service it for whatever issue he may be having.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we should start to wrap this up.
So if any of the listeners out there want to learn more about JT Eaton, do you guys have a website or any other way they can reach out or learn more about you guys?
Sure. It's www.jteaton.com.
All right, simple enough. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. Have a tremendous day and keep on marketing.
Well, been a great 11th episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider leaving a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast. It would really help us a ton, and we'd greatly appreciate it. We'd like to again thank Dale from JT Eaton for joining us today. And feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions or comments about anything we talked about today or marketing in general. You can visit us on our website, Kicking It with KPOC, or on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as KPOC Marketing. This has been a great Kicking It with KPOC, brought to you by KPOC Marketing. Thanks for listening. We'll have something just as great for you next time.